Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
Tell me why, though I try to forget, tell me why I think of you, yes. I know I'll never be free. What has happened to me? Tell me why.
And Bobby, I will give you 5 cents if you can tell me who the singer was and what year it was recorded. Well, you can. It was after.
Keep your money. Keep your money. Tell me.
That was Eddie Fisher.
Ah.
1951 version of Tell Me Why, which plays largely in the book that we're going to discuss tonight. So anyway, welcome to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. I am back with you tonight. I am your host, Jim Christina, and I am looking at and talking with my co-host, who is not Russ Avison this evening, although it's supposed to be, but he's out there training dogs like a good, dutiful little guy. But we have In the chair tonight, Miss Bobby Jean Bell. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, I'm still making notes. I just had a whole bunch of things come to my mind. I got to write them down or I'll forget.
for Ronan, I was reading a Facebook yesterday, Ronan, and I saw a post from Sam. And it says, is this hot or what? And it was a picture of the dashboard of his car. Uh-huh. 119 degrees.
Oh my Lord, we were 106, but they were all 119 where we used to live. Woohoo!
Oh, that's the valley. You know, it gets really bad out there. Yeah. The end of the valley. Yeah. For those of you who don't know, it's just in a convergent zone. And if there's any smog at all, it goes right to the valley. And the heat just sits right there. There's no breeze, no nothing. So, and we used to broadcast actually from the fourth floor of the tower down in Sherman Oaks, California, right in the corner of Riverside and what the hell was the name of that street? Riverside and what?
Oh, I don't remember. I'm already forgetting all of that. It's like a big black hole, you know? I don't need to remember those things.
Now we are broadcasting from, I'm broadcasting from my very secret lab.
Woodman. Woodman. Thank you, yeah. Ronan.
Yes. And my very secret studio here in the Sawtooth Mountains in southwestern Idaho. And, of course, Bobby Jean is in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And if Russ were here, he would be in Fillmore, California. And Richard is in Fruta, Colorado. So we're kind of a diverse bunch. And we are just – this is our sixth year, and we are just so happy to be here with you all. And I know – for a fact that Bobby Jean has got 4 other radio shows that she does during the week. And I know that one or two of those shows, she is looking for Western music writers and new artists that have recorded CDs or recorded some music on MP3s. Is that correct, Bobby?
Yes, I'm still an old-fashioned girl. I like the CDs because I can't forget them. They can sit in front of me and I know that I got them in, and I like liner notes and I like to see how all the songs hang together with a songwriter's or a musician performer's, you know, concept. So, but I know the world is going all MP3, and I do know how to work with those.
Okay.
But yes, I do host and co-host several shows that really focus on Western swing, traditional country, like the old days, a little bit of that, a little bit of bluegrass. And I'm always wanting to know who out there in cowboy poetry, who out there is doing it, and would love to have you reach out to me. And you can do that on the Writer's Block Facebook page, or you can email me at Bobby with an I, Jean with a J, Bell at gmail.com.
Perfect. Perfect. And if you're a writer, an aspiring writer, or a writer that's got a new work out that you want to get advertised weekly, for a nominal fee of $25, you can get it. We'll give you a 1-minute ad or less right here in the writer's block at the top of the show or at the bottom of the show, wherever you want to put it. It'll be done live. So all you need to do is send me, jimchristina@yahoo.com, 60-second or less description of the book, a real brief synopsis, your name, the title, and of course, I do want the $25. So those you can send that PayPal only to jchristina@tuscanybaybooks, and we'll give you the date that your ad is going to be on the air, and that'll be it. So that being said, we have a wonderful guest on tonight. We had a great conversation in our introductory call on Tuesday. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Vincent Hess, I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about himself. Please welcome to the Writer's Block, a big rousing welcome, Mr. Vincent Hess.
Well, hello,
everybody. Victor Hess.
It is Victor Hess. I was going to get that in there.
Okay.
Eventually. I was going to let it just slide a little bit.
I give wrong phone numbers, too, so, you know.
It's okay to correct the host. We know you're listening.
That's true.
Well, I am so happy to be here. I really want to thank both of you for allowing me to have a little bit of time here with you and to answer any questions that you might have. But the book that I'm here about is called The Clock Tower Treasure, and it's about Jesse Hall. And it just so happens that I was born when and where Jesse was born, in Xenia, Ohio. My mother, sister, and I lived my early years in another little town called Sabina, Ohio, in Xenia. I left there in 1964 for college, and then the Army found me, and there I taught bomb disposal. After I got out, I married, had children, worked selling real estate until 1979 and started selling telephone systems in New Orleans and Dallas and back in Ohio. And now I'm settled in southeast Louisiana, close to our grandchildren. And I guess you could tell in there that really you haven't heard anything about me starting writing.
No.
No.
Well, that's a question we'll get to. So hold that thought, because, you know, that's a question I always like to ask our writers, when and where and why and... So, now listening to your bio, we know where the storyline came from. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about this book, because it's quite an interesting study in characterizations.
The Clock Tower Treasure, it is the second book of a trilogy. So it's one where it would be helpful if you've read the first book. But it is the second book. It can be read standalone. It's about young Jesse Hall. And we had been following him from age 8. And so now we've got him at around 11 still with an abusive father and a pregnant mom. But his mom and him had broken away from his dad, and they discovered this little town of Sabina, Ohio. And that happened in the first book. And they consider this town of Sabina a town that saved them. They still deal with poverty with Jesse, and he has a best friend there, a little girl his age named Lynn, and together they deliver newspapers. They'll raid change slots of vending machines in town. That's when they had all those cigarette machines around.
Right.
They would do odd jobs. His mom made money by sewing on an old Singer treadle machine and clean houses. And then they'd get a few little miracles that just seemed to show up just when they needed it most. But they couldn't keep up, and Jesse's mom agrees to remarry her first husband. And that's what gets us into the Clock Tower Treasure summary, or the Clock Tower Treasure. It opens with Jesse describing his dilemma. He doesn't want to move out of Sabina. His mother wants to marry her first husband. He still has faith in his own dad. And if anyone is going to put him in a new home, in a new town, with a new school, he wants it to be his own dad, not his brother's dad. He describes
well, he has,
these... Go ahead.
I was just going to say he has a dream of a lot of divorced kids have, that they mm-hmm. just want their parents back together.
That's exactly it. And he's going to believe that no matter how realistic or unrealistic that thought can be. And so the story opens where he's describing these feelings he has to Eugene, this corpse on display in Sabina for 25 or more years. And he just talks things out with the corpse. And I guess we'll talk about the corpse a little later.
Sure.
It takes a full year for the house in Xenia to be built. And it's during that time that Jesse discovers church. He discovers, and the pastor's wife there discovers that Jesse has a beautiful boy soprano voice. And they finally get to move to Xenia where everything is just brand new. It's a new house. He is with these two half-brothers who he idolizes. He gets to play Little League. This is what is a dream of his. He sees fireworks for the first time. He learns to swim in a huge swimming pool. And then, of course, disaster strikes.
Right. Do we really want to go into what the disaster was?
That is not, well. I kind of don't. I just
okay,
say that
good.
He was hospitalized.
Okay.
And while he was there, they had a reading volunteer, which I think a lot of hospitals do have for children, even back then. And he is captivated by this legend told by this hospital volunteer storyteller about the Shawnee Indian treasure, supposedly buried somewhere around Xenia, where he had just moved. So he's released from the hospital a little bit too soon, but it's not to a new house. It's to a three-room apartment. The remarriage fell apart in the 3 months that he was in the hospital. But he and his mom are fighters, and as in the first book, people just step up to help them. And that's a big thing that this book is about. He does join the Boy Scouts. He sings at his grade school. And it's through the scouting activities and his singing that he just discovers these little clues that might lead him to what he thinks is that Shawnee Indian treasure. And he sees the final clue in an old crate stored in the courthouse clock tower. So he and a school friend and his neighbor bicycle 10 miles in freezing weather. This is January in Ohio to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
And what they find is a different kind of treasure, not the treasure they expected.
Right.
So I'll just stop right there.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That is a good idea. But I have to say that it was a surprise as to what the treasure was. The book that she was reading to them was about Tecumseh, which I did some research on Tecumseh the last couple of days.
Oh, and I did.
And there was no mention of the treasure, but there certainly was a mention of him leading the tribes, the combined tribes, into war against the Americans during the War of 1812.
Yeah.
Correct.
And being killed, of course.
He was.
And you know, I just had a brain fart to beat all brain farts.
Oh my God.
Wow. I forgot where I was going with that. I'm terribly sorry. I will remember. Bobby, do you have got anything? Because I'm going to sit here dumb-bombed this for the next
Well, I'll just jump in for a moment and tell you, Victor, that I really did enjoy this book. And I think you may have in mind that this is for a young reader, but I'm an adult born in the year that this mostly takes place in. And I was totally captivated by this young man. Jesse's quite an unusual, maybe he's very normal for the time period of 1956. By how we might consider kids today, he seems, he's ambitious, he's a dreamer, he gets along great with his mom. There's no sassing giving her any problems. You know, he's got a little sister who's a year at the beginning of the book and turns two somewhere along the way and needs to be taken care of. Mom isn't always available, and he's happy to do that. Change diapers or, you know, whatever. He's got dreams of baseball and bikes and Corvettes, and he's very interested in scripture. He's very interested in the Bible. He gets, you know, he's just a really neat kid. Everyone sort of seems to like him pretty good. He has supporters. When you did mention about a hospital stay, when he gets out of the hospital, he's a little bit shaky, and you introduce a really neat character, Wally, who just kind of steps in. And, you know, I just kind of felt like, wow, is this kid for real?
Well, you know, his characterization of Jesse is so well done. That, I mean, he down to the can of 3-in-1 oil that he carries when he's walking his sister in the old stroller.
Having
to pull the wheels off and oil them as they're going.
Yeah.
So to keep from squeaking.
And it's first person. We're hearing it through it's written through his eyes. So we're totally getting his view on, you know, on the world. But yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off, Jim, but I had meant to say it. And it is written in the first person, which... Right. I wondered for you as a writer, Victor, to be imagining yourself in his shoes in that moment in time. Was that difficult for you to write in the first
question? You know, I never really studied writing in college. And the most writing I did prior to 2014 was business proposals and economic development studies in Appalachia. The Army had no reason to teach me writing skills as an EOD instructor. And I didn't have access to the experiences, Jim, that other people did, because I was stationed stateside, even though, you know, the Vietnam conflict was going on.
Right.
So when I first started writing this, I did write it in third person. And I wanted to learn more, so I found this workshop in St. Augustine that was run by an author, Connie Mae Fowler. And I was put in this fiction group led by Amy Bloom. Now, I don't know if you've heard of her, but she is a great author. And I was in there with 30-year-old college literature instructors with MFAs, and it was there I truly started learning about the art of writing and how truly kind other writers can be with someone like me. And I wanted to learn more. And it was during one of those sessions that somebody said, you need to do this in first person. You just have to do this in first person. And then I was writing about a boy named Victor Hess, and they said, you really need to make this fiction because you'll feel freer about it. So I just took their advice and did it. And I was already 50, maybe 60,000 words in, not this book, but of Jesse Sings, 50,000 words into it, and I went back and changed it all to first person, and that took forever.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. Absolutely. Certainly it did. First person is hard to write in to start with, and then having to go back and change your whole manuscript. Holy mackerel, that must have taken you a couple months.
Oh, at least. And then you think you get everything, and you don't.
Right.
But the question, the question that you asked, Bobby, was did it make a difference? And it made a huge difference, because there would be times that I'm sitting out in my backyard writing, and many of the things that are in this book actually did take place, and they can bring tears to an old man like me when you think about it. You
know? Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that reading this book, if nothing else, that you did in this book was spot on. Was you captured the 50s.
I was going to say.
You captured the 1950s. Yeah. Having grown up a 50s baby, being born in 49. So, I mean, you know, all of 1950s. And I was, you know. And, I mean, I can remember stuff that you talk about in your book. The music and the cars and the way we did things. And the old wagons and the old trikes and the bikes. You know, the Schwinn bikes with
Burning trash. burning trash in your backyard. Who does burning that? Burning trash.
We had it. In fact, I got burned in the trash barrel. So I remember my dad's trash barrel. And
I'll never forget the trash barrel.
Yeah, I know, huh? And my folks had a 1951 Pontiac convertible. It was yellow. Remember, he's two-tone yellow and white. And then they sold that, and they got a 1953 Chevy station wagon.
Oh, wow. Was that like a Nomad or a?
Well, it was it was a four door. It was definitely a station wagon, but it was it was a 54 or 53, and I remember all of that, and it's just like, wow.
And didn't you feel that he wove it in again, not like a data dump or whatever? You know, it's just part of the story.
Uh huh.
As he explains his experiences, even catching fireflies. I'm sure kids still catch fireflies today, but I sure remember visiting with grandparents in Wisconsin where there were fireflies, and we were always there around the 4th of July. So the whole fireworks and fireflies thing really spoke to me.
Right.
But you have written a lot of wonderful little scenario pieces that definitely bring this time period to life, and I really I enjoyed that too. Something I enjoyed about the book. And as a reader, I read slowly because I'm reading. I'm not editing, or just reading. And so all of that, I enjoyed that.
Right, one thing another thing in your book that caught my attention was the fact that even though Jesse wanted his father. He wanted his father's love. He wanted his father to be with him. He continually saw his father throw them away. And yet he would never give up the grasp on that relationship that he had. And he was holding on to with a white knuckle flight.
Yeah.
And it was, I think that's so true to life, even now. I think that's absolutely true to life. And so I applaud you. That was very well done, and that grabbed my psyche a lot, because I knew a lot of kids growing up that their parents divorced and watched them go through that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
my folks were married for 61 years, so forever as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I'm working on that.
Are you? Good for you. Good for you. Anyway. The book this book came out obviously because it was part of I'm going to ask part of your life. How much of this book is you, and how much of this book is Jesse, and how much of this book is total fiction?
I don't know if I haven't counted the paragraphs, so I can't put them all in the column. I guess I would be able to. But I'd almost say a third, a third, and a third.
Okay.
Because I will tell you that Jesse did spring out of this thing, and it was no longer Victor Hess that was there.
Right.
This was Jesse Hall, and these people that surrounded he and his mom and sister would do just little things that meant so much to them. I'm not even sure if I made that as clear in the book as probably I should have.
Right.
But that there was so much support there. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to use an old cliche that it takes a community or a village or something like that. What I want to say is that people are good, basically. And for the most part, they move toward helping others.
Right. I'm going to stop you right there. I'm late getting into a commercial, so bear with us. You are listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block, and we'll be right back with you right after this very brief word from LA Talk Radio. Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com
find the link that says be a host and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say, and if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com, and listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio. And we are back with our guest. That would be Victor Hess, not Vincent Hess. Of course, I'm going to give you the wrong phone number here in a minute, so might as well just keep in character. Okay, if you want to call and talk to Vic tonight, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. Again, I didn't write it down either, Bobby. The number is 323-203-0815, and you can call and you can talk directly to the writer of this fine, fine novel. Okay, Bobby, you're on.
Okay. I have a question about the title. Again, as a reader, I'm always thinking about how's that title, where's that title come from? Where's that title come from? And when I first picked up the book, Victor, and I read that title, I thought, oh, this sort of sounds like a Hardy Boys book. Or, you know, this sounds like a, this is going to be fun, kind of like a mystery sort of book. And you do reveal, where that title comes from, but it's kind of late in the book. I'd love you to just talk a little bit about why you decided to, without doing any spoiler alerts, if possible, why you decided to title it this, and why did you choose to not really introduce the clock tower. We do get an introduction to it on page 79, actually, but in passing, and then it plays another role. But just talk a little bit about why you chose to title it this title.
Well, I agree with what you are saying there, that it should have showed up a lot earlier. Unfortunately, in my writing, I kept Jesse and Sabina a little longer than maybe I should have. I'm talking about words, not months. And could have introduced Xenia a lot sooner, and it would have hit the reader, you know, more quickly. The clock tower treasure refers to those two crates that were found in the clock tower. I don't mind, you know, mentioning those right now. And the impact that they had, plus the fact that the clock tower had such a meaning to the community, as far as it was always on time and they would set their clocks to it. And then the other thing is that Jesse did have an experience there as far as his voice was concerned and his singing, you mm-hmm. know, a Christmas carol over mm-hmm. the entire town. Mm-hmm. If I had brought it in earlier, I think that you wouldn't have had that question.
Did you consider other possible titles? Just because this book covers so many different topics.
Yeah.
I mean, we have dysfunctional families, and we have alcoholism, and we have all of the boys' dreams of that time period. You know, you cover, you know, the mom has been a bit battered, and we have a pastor, if you will, who's not really appropriate with young men. You know, you hit on a lot of topics. And so I wondered, when you were thinking of titles, were there any others that came to mind, or was this the title you had from the get-go?
It is the title I had pretty much from the get-go. I'm trying to think back to see if I had any other alternatives. And maybe my publisher is listening too, and she can remind me if that was the situation, but I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I think as a reader, I also began to think about all the treasures that Jesse gathers as he goes through this year and a half of his life. And, you know, you start us off with his personal treasure, this wonderful trunk, this sort of footlocker trunk that fits under his bed, and he keeps everything. And it's so fun to think of all the things
that
he
has got
keeps.
A secret compartment in it.
He even got a secret compartment.
I wanted one of those.
And well, so I guess
to, you'll, You'll have to read Jesse Sings, and you will learn more about the
secret
compartment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can charge me for that.
we might. No. The only downside I have about this book, what happened to Lynn? We never heard from her again.
Lynn is...
You know, she just disappeared. But I'm hoping beyond hope, and now you don't have to tell me, because I know you're working on book three. I'm hoping beyond hope that Lynn shows back up and she becomes the love interest for Jesse.
Maybe,
because headed that direction. So
yeah, and he's noticing that she's changing a little bit each time he happens to see her.
The notes were, love, Lynn.
Yeah.
So you read the swimming pool scene, apparently.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And, you know, Karen is a really cool gal, too, and she's obviously older. And it was sort of interesting to see the part that Karen plays in his life, taking him to the car dealerships goes hiking in France and then comes back. And, you know, really interesting gal, too. You really have given us quite a cast of characters.
Yeah. Taking him for the ride in the 56 Corvette. That was awesome.
Yeah. And she goes in and all the guys are fawning over her. And they're because, you know, you wouldn't think that they'd pay any attention to Jesse.
And she's
Jesse walked in on his own. But, you know, oh, man, they all want Karen.
We're running late in the last one. I'm going to get this one out of the way. There's some stuff on your process I want to get to. So without any further ado, you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is The Writer's Block. And we will be right back after a short word from Tuscany Bay Books. Congratulations, you finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it? Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick it in the drawer with the other six or seven. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books? See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf so your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com, your answer to getting your book published. And right now, we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books. And we're back with our guest tonight, Mr. Victor Hess, and of course, Bobby Jean Bell. And we're talking to Victor about his book, about the Clock Tower Treasure. However, we are now going to get into his process a little bit. Vic, when did you first start writing? And what was your thoughts? Were you short stories? Were you novels? What did you first start writing?
Well, it was back around 2014. I was on a business trip. My wife was with me. We went to a meeting at Universal Studios at one of the resorts there. And before the meetings began, I just sat down. And I for some reason, I felt this urge that I needed to start writing. And I didn't have anything to write on. So I went to the little hotel shop. I found they didn't have anything except this photo album that has these pages where you talk about your photos.
Right.
And believe it or not, I started writing it. I still have that book. I started writing right there, and I just wrote and wrote and wrote. The objective was not so much to write a book. It was I wanted to recall things that would help my kids kind of understand what life was like back in those days, because really they had no clue. There wasn't anything that could really give them a clue. So that's where it all began, but I couldn't stop doing it. And that's when I started looking at it as something more than just a piece of information to pass on. And then that got me into that, going to the writer's workshop in St. Augustine, and then I just kept going to these things, a couple retreats up in the Vermont College of Fine Arts, and number of other workshops. And then I joined a writer's group. So if there's authors out there who are listening to the show, If you aren't in a writer's group, it's just the greatest thing in the world, because you're in there with people who will support you, and at the same time, you can share information. And so much was developed as just as a result of, you know, three old guys sitting on my gazebo, and we talked through what each other had written. And so that's kind of giving you a clue into the writing process. So mm-hmm. I write, and then we let other people review it and look at it.
Which is kind of a dichotomy from other writers. Other writers don't want you to see their work until they have at least one full manuscript done. So, you know, writing groups, I understand, are a lot different. I don't belong to one myself. So I live in a town that's got, you know, 12 people and 17 horses, 253 cows and 16 dogs. So there's no writer's group here.
I would think, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, Bobby Jean lives in Albuquerque. There's tons of writers' groups there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet. They probably thrive there.
Oh, yeah.
There's Southwest Writers Group, yeah. And I know when we ask this question, as Jim will say, you know, we have some folks that will share with a writing partner or a writing group almost chapter by chapter. And then others that are not confident about sharing the work until the work is, you know, done. So it's wonderful that there are so many different ways for writers to be able to get feedback as well as read other people's work, so that you also kind of learn the art of constructive criticism, I guess, right. And also pick up on the sharing between all of you on how you approach.
Right.
Do you write every day, Victor? Do you write every day, or do you write a few hours a day, or what's your schedule for yourself?
Yeah, I used to write every day. I haven't recently. I got into something that I guess we'll talk about later. But I am just now getting to the point where I can finish this third book, because I just got stumped.
Mm-hmm.
And it really stopped me. And I had a number of other things that was taking my attention at the time. I still do have a real job so that I can live. And between that and the writing, and then we've got a very active writing group, so I'm very active in it. So that part kind of fills the life. But when you've got it in your mind, though, and you know that it's there, you're going to take the time and put it down on paper. And that's mm-hmm. where I am now. I'm ready to finish this third one.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Jean, what he was referring to is the question.
I know. So go ahead and ask it.
Well, I'm already asking, but I will ask you on the air now. I know that you have had writer's block. How did you manage to get yourself out of it?
Well, I'm not going to say that this worked. It might have just been that if I hadn't done this, it would have happened anyway. But so here we are, 93, 94 degrees temperature.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a camper or anything like that. But I went ahead and took my tent out to Fountain Blue State Park here in Louisiana on Lake Pontchartrain. And I just watched the stars, sat out, cooked my meal, and started writing things down. The first thing I did was try to prepare for this interview tonight so that I would be able to at least partially entertain. And the other part was, what am I going to do with this dilemma I have with the book? And it didn't take long, though. It just took just being away. So I think I solved my problem. I do want to sit down now and start putting things to paper and finish the third book. I have other things in my head that I want to get moving on. I've got a memoir that I want to write, and I've got a family story that I want to get into a piece of fiction. So there are things that I want to go ahead and get to. Unfortunately, it's one project at a time for me as far as my writing is concerned.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, there is no getting prepared for this show, because as soon as you think you got it done, We're going to throw you a curveball.
I never think I'm prepared enough, actually. So it would sound like for you, at least, when the block is removed, not only are you able to move forward on what you're working on, but it sounds like because you're eager to get to some other work, you kind of need to move past this in order to let everything else flow and get you going on some of the other dreams of the creative process that you have waiting in the wings, so to speak, right?
That's right. I mean, I've got little drawers that have the projects in them. It doesn't stop me. If I do have like a day where something I should be writing, but I'm not writing, I may go ahead and do some research on something else that I want to do later. And I'll just collect that and slip it into a drawer. And I've got these drawers marked so I can go back to it and have information that I don't have to research later.
This brings up the question. Do you ever go back to the drawer and take out a project and start in on it again? I'm going to take that as a no.
When did I ever do that? No, I think the best thing I could do probably is number the drawers.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go with numbering drawers. Go ahead, Bobby.
Well, I was just going to say that, but you probably wouldn't go back to that drawer, pull something out, and then say, oh, what the heck with this? What was I thinking? And destroy it or something. I mean, it seems like when we talk to songwriters as well as writers, that no good idea, you know, just may not be its time yet. Or you have to kind of revisit it again later. So is that kind of what happens when you go into one of those drawers? You just kind of go like, not now and put it back.
Well, that may happen. I may have to figure that one out. But uh-huh. You know, something has changed. We've had a slight change, maybe even going back in time, where our stories now, let's take Jesse, for example. Mm-hmm. So this will be three books. It'll be a trilogy. It'll be finished, but I've still got what I consider to be great characters that are still young. And with this new idea called Vella from Amazon,
right?
People are talking about, okay, go ahead and put a 10 to 12,000 word piece together. Use your characters, use your audience, and entertain the people that have enjoyed these characters before, and give mm-hmm. them new exciting things to do,
right,
and to find out and to discover. And I think that doing that, you're doing a couple things. One is you are really completing your project that you started. Uh-huh. And the second thing is for the people that are your fans, you're giving them something that they desire and that they love, and that you can keep on giving it without them having to read a book two or three times.
Right.
So I'm investigating that to see if there is something to that.
Okay. Are you a plotter or are you a pantser?
I was a pantser until I got to my third book, and I was a pantser, and then I am plotting through it, but it's with a T, not a D.
Gotcha.
So what I've done now is I've gone back through it, and I've probably become a plotter as a result of it.
Gotcha. I'm going back to your drawers, because it's an interesting, because I don't use drawers. I have file folders that I keep in my computer. Yeah. For things that I write, and I can't use them right now, but they're really good, so I stuck them there. Do you ever go back into those drawers and find something that, hey, you know what, this will fit really well? Did it maybe change the time and change the name, but it'll work really well with what I'm writing. Do you ever find that to be the truth for you?
It has. Yeah, it has. And part of it is with the material that I've collected for this book. I've even titled it Evangeline. and it's family history. But what it does is it hints at why Jesse's grandfather is so devout. And so in researching that part, and it had a lot to do with them coming over from Germany back, I think it was around 1730, and that they it was a boat full of Anabaptists, and really learned a lot there. So I'm it allows you to almost say, okay, yeah, it's historical fiction, but historical fiction you can use to even teach some history too.
Okay. That actually makes perfect sense. Well, we're going to do our last, we're going to make our last break, if you don't mind. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is, of course, the Writer's Block. And we'll be back right after a very brief word from Creative Edge.
Hi, Jim Christina here for Creative Edge Publicity. And you know, there's a reason that authors flock to Creative Edge. Yes, it's true, and no one would believe it, but it is true. Creative Edge, the grassroots publicity firm that has stayed community-minded, is growing. And not only growing, but busting right out of their seams. With a client base of over 70 authors, 2 New York Times bestsellers, 6 USA Today bestsellers, and multiple international bestsellers and award winners, Creative Edge in 4 years has become one of the mainstays in the publicity book market, offering reader-focused opportunities in all levels of media, including podcasts, radio, TV, print, and much more. When it comes to publicity, Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge are experts in the book industry. Look him up at www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future.
And we're back. I mean, for the last few minutes we have right here in the Writer's Block with our guest tonight, Mr. Victor Hess. So we know that you're writing your new book, Victor, and please tell me that we're going to see Lynn again. Just give me a yes or a no.
You will see Lynn again. You may not see as much of Lynn as you want, but you'll enjoy what I've done.
Okay. To our listeners, Lynn is a very special character.
Mm-hmm, she is.
Absolutely.
And I hated to see her leave the last, third of the book.
Was Jesse going to leave first or was she going to leave first?
So exactly.
What do you
exactly.
Flip a coin or?
Well, it's nostalgia for me. Mm-hmm. You know, for Bobby, Bobby wasn't there. For me, it's nostalgia because, you know, I had those little girlfriends.
Yeah. Well, and I moved a lot as a kid in the 60s and in the 70s. So that whole having a friend and having to move, I can definitely relate to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we know that you're working on a new book. Where can our listeners find you on the web?
All they have to do is go to victorhess.com.
That's easy enough.
And if they do and just sign up for my newsletter, because I do a lot of giveaways.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah, you sign up, and usually I'll have a giveaway for people that have signed up within a month or 6 weeks or something like that, kind of between newsletters. And then in each newsletter, I have little contests for them to participate in. And I have sent out a bundle of books in the past. Uh-huh. And I'll continue to do that. I enjoy doing that.
Well, that's called shameless self-promotion.
And that's what you need to do.
It's terrible. It's trying to buy your audience, I know.
It's necessary, and I'll tell you what, it works. It works because once they get your name and they get your storytelling abilities, they'll be looking for you. Mm-hmm. So
well,
it does work.
I hope they continue to. You know, and I really hope this interview has helped on that they know that third book is really going to come out because they're chomping at the bit, too.
Well, make sure that you post this as well. And then the link will be up probably tomorrow morning. or it'll actually, well, it'll be up tonight.
Yeah, it'll be up tonight.
And you can post a link on any of your websites or whatever you want to post it on. Folks can listen to the show. I hope some of them listened live. And, you know, but a good example of getting your name out there, you read Jefferson's Chance. Now, who would have thunk?
Yeah.
Who would have thunk? Anyway, you know what, Victor, we got to go. But so thank you so much for being on the show with us. And it's, I understand you got a storm coming into Louisiana. So,
ooh.
Yeah, we do. We've been watching it here. It's not going to be a hurricane.
No.
But everything's a rainmaker. And so we'll see how this one turns out, see which way it goes. We'll know more tomorrow.
Okay. Excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Please contact Jerry. We are, as of today, officially booked up for the end of this year. But when the next book comes out, make sure you get a hold of Jerry and get booked for next year sometime.
That'll be great. I look forward to it.
We'd love to have you back. Thank you so much for joining us. And next week, we have writer Rebecca Coleman. And we'll be discussing her new book, The Kimono Tattoo, came out in this month, actually. And it's a very long book, and I'm not too sure what it's about, but we'll get into it and find out. And I that's about it for us. I don't have much else. Bobby's always working. I can see her brain just turning, always.
I'm reading about next week's book right now from what Jerry sent us. Yeah, it sounds very interesting. I'll be starting that tonight. If it's long, I better start it tonight.
I got to give myself a day or two. Anyway. Thank you for joining us, and for Mr. Ronan Rosner, our engineer, who works very hard to keep us on the air, Bobby Jean Bell, her husband Jim, myself, the bookie, it can never go without, and thank you to the bookie, Russ Avison, who is AWOL again this week, and of course Richard Polinelli and Sam Hassan, the man who can make it all happen for us. For the Writer's Block for LA Talk Radio, we are out of here.